Hi, I'm Chud X.
And I'm Lanny.
And this is the world as it is today. So as I sit here and drink my cup of coffee, and we're doing the intro to the world as it is today, I realize, I don't know if anyone else listening would view it as this, but I realize I view this show as a morning show.
Oh.
This is a morning show, unlike Are We Content, which is a night show. Like
late night.
Late night.
2 a.m.
Every episode I'm starting with asking Bob, how you doing tonight? And we're recording that at night and it feels like a night conversation. Whereas these feel more like a kitchen table breakfast nook conversation.
I love it.
Any listeners that don't have a breakfast nook, go ahead and unsubscribe. Get out of here. we're for breakfast nook people.
What is a breakfast? I mean, we have a breakfast. That's what you call the space in the home, but I'd never heard breakfast nook before that.
I don't know. We had a breakfast nook when I was a kid and a friend of mine did too, like an adult friend of mine that we didn't know when we were kids. And I don't know, for some reason, we always made fun of that word.
Oh, right.
Breakfast
nook. It's like a Christian family thing to say about a spot in your house.
Want to go get some breakfast nookie?
Ooh, that sounds better. So I wanted to talk about a few things today, but before we get started, I just wanted to tell everybody who might not know that I do have a workshop, a live online workshop coming up at the end of this month, July 30th. It's a Sunday at 4 p.m. Pacific, and it's fermented beverages. It's one of my favorite workshops to host, and it's like one of my favorite things to do and talk about.
It's one of my favorite things that you do. It's one of my favorite things to consume. And it's one of my favorite things for you to spread, because I think that pleasure that comes from drinking those fermented beverages is like something that everyone should experience, especially like the term fermented beverage. I think the term fermented, how many people, I think we've probably talked about this. You certainly have, I'm sure, in one place or another. How many people hear fermented and they say that's alcohol?
Oh,
that's,
sure. That's if you're booze. Thinking of a drink, some people don't know about fermentation other than to make beer or alcohol.
I offered our neighbor some fermented salsa not long after we moved here. And he was like, oh, no, we don't drink. You know, like that was the, and I tried explaining and it was like, I think we're okay. We're straight. You know,
It was really, that's weird, but it's great. I was thinking the other day about how people talk about, oh, I want to get started to do more for myself, or I want to get started homesteading, but I can't because I'm in this apartment in the city. And what better way to get close to nature than to bring it to you if you can't go to it. And if you start this jar of a fermented drink, it is creating a new culture inside of it. It's nature doing its thing. Mm-hmm. And so you can witness that and be a part of it and smell it and taste it and see it and hear it. And all from your own tiny apartment or from your homestead, whatever, you know, wherever you may be. And I think that's cool. And then this year, my first person to sign up was Monica Perez for the next workshop. So if you want to come and hang out with me and Monica Perez and talk about fermented drinks, and she's got that experience as a bartender and a mixologist. Uh-huh. And so like, I think that'll be really valuable to make the class more fun and interesting. She'll have good questions, of course.
Plus, like one of the things that is appealing to me about your courses in general is the conversational aspect, the fact that everybody can interact. And Monica is, as I'm sure anyone listening to this has at least heard the propaganda report, you know, is at least familiar with Monica on some level. And she's not only a great conversationalist, but she asks really good questions. That's, I guess, what makes
her such a great conversationalist. Last year when she attended the fermented vegetables workshop, it made it more fun. It was one of my first times really hanging out with her, though. I think it's before we podcasted with her and before she visited us. So I was really nervous at first, but it made it more fun because she did ask really good questions and kept this a conversation instead of a lecture, mm-hmm. which is what the goals are for these 2-hour workshops. If you're not into that, you can purchase just the replay and you can just watch this later and still get the booklet and still get the access to the group chat and all that stuff. But if you want more information, go to greenerpostures.com/workshops and just click on the fermented beverage workshop and it'll walk you through everything we'll be doing there and how to sign up. And it's only $40. And if you really can't afford $40 and you really want to go, just tell me and we'll work it out.
Yeah.
So yeah,
no one's going to be barred.
No, I want everybody to know about this stuff. And it's stuff that it's like easy things that you can do in your house with ingredients you probably already have on hand.
You're putting things behind any kind of paywall because we need money, not because we're trying to stop people from getting the information.
Oh no. Yeah. Information's not behind
a paywall. And if anyone ever wants to overpay,
that's an option.
You can always overpay.
It's a suggested price of $40. You can pay me whatever you feel.
Sky's the limit. The dome is the limit. The
dome's the limit. But really, that's a good point because the dollar amount there is just to make sure I'm paying for all of these things that I'm using online that cost money that are my hobby. If I can cover the cost from that, then I feel like this is a sustainable model for entertainment and I can continue moving forward. That actually brings me to another thing I wanted to mention. I wanted to tell you that I've recently made a purchase for our home that may or may not benefit our lives.
You spend my money?
Well, yeah, I don't have my own really.
Which one? We're always.
Oh yeah. I'm going to tell you. Okay. I'm walking you in here, but I did this I made this purchase because I was inspired by a podcast that I listened to.
Oh, I think I know then.
Yeah. So I was listening. That's also going to improve. That is definitely improving our lives.
It's already improved mine.
Okay. So I got a commercial popcorn machine. Uh-huh. It looks like the popcorn machines they have at the movie theaters, but it's about, you know, a quarter the size.
In fact, you said I assume that was that was Are We Content?
Yes. I was listening to Are We Content and you and Bob at the beginning of not the last episode, but the one before, started talking about popcorn makers and people making bunches of money with popcorn because it's so cheap and how much they rip you off at the theater.
That thing is about half the size of the one at the theater I worked at 20 plus years ago.
Yeah. And you were talking about that theater. And then that was probably half the size of the one that's at our local Regal Cinema.
Those ones there they're even bigger than they look. Because they're isolated, you're not seeing anything to compare the size to.
Right.
And, they're like you could fit a couple of children.
I was gonna say it's a walk-in popcorn maker. It's a walk-in, like a walk-in closet. But yeah, so I bought a popcorn maker, and this weekend I'm gonna be at the Rising Moon Fest and Festival in Bellingham, Washington, with my popcorn maker. And on Sunday, I'm going to be talking fermentation. They've got me set up for an hour between 10:30 and 11:30 on Sunday morning at that fest. So if anybody's in that
area. Yeah, if anybody's local, you should come check that out. At least Sunday, but it's a whole weekend thing our friends are doing. It's a hippy-dippy festival. there's some freedom involved in it.
Yeah, there's the owners of the property are really great, and I'd love to support them. And you can learn more about what they do at risingmoonmeadows.com. So thanks for the inspiration to finally pull the trigger. Cause it's been 3 years in the making that I've wanted this commercial popcorn maker. And my only regret is that I didn't buy it sooner because we could have used it so many more times by now.
My only regret is that we don't have a good permanent position for it in the house. So it's going to have to be a covered in the basement item.
Yeah.
Pull up.
Yeah. Which will be annoying because it'll be
pretty sweet to be able to just have use a commercial
hardwired in or whatever with a vent above it. But yeah, instead it'll be like, Chud, can you go down to the basement and get me the popcorn maker, please? And most of the time, you know, I can make smaller portions, but you know, if we have a bunch of friends over and we're going to the other idea of getting a, what's it called? Projector to watch movies outside and make popcorn.
That was kind of my immediate reaction. Once I'd put it together and saw it sitting there and there's little film reels around the top of it.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, if we had a video projector, there was one sitting in a place that I could have taken it. Nobody seemed to be laying claim to it. Probably would have been, it should have waited a few more days and it disappeared. I don't know. It was basically in a lost and found. Uh-huh. I don't know if it went to an owner or if someone did what I was thinking of doing, just being like, this is just sitting here. I'm going to take this. If I could come across one as cheap as free.
Yeah.
Or maybe $20.
Yeah. But
I wouldn't really want to spend any money on it. It's something I would want to fall into my lap. If we had a video projector.
Yeah.
Doing movies with popcorn. There's the logistic though of nighttime. It's a summertime thing and it would need to be after dark. So, you know,
yeah.
In June, July, we're looking at like
10 o'clock,
10:30 at the earliest to start the movie. And then it stops being so much of a family friendly concept.
Yeah. Yeah. So we would need to, I don't know. We'll keep our eye out for
Cheap. Then we could show Necromantic.
And I was like, then we're showing horror movies like Joe Bob style. But I think if we keep our eye out for projector, if we find one, then doing some testing to see how dark it needs to be and what time we could start. And then we would go from there for planning.
Now, if we did it in the barn.
Oh, in the barn. Okay.
All right.
This is how we come up with all our fun ideas of things that we do. So you got a little, what's the word? Inside baseball.
There you
on
go.
That. I'm making a sports reference.
That's awesome, dude.
So but really today I wanted to say, is there anything for you? Listen to Are We Content? It's out once a week.
Yep.
We've got other guests sometimes. You and Bob are there.
So far I've only had one other guest, and I intend on changing that a little. Mm-hmm. Just have an occasional third part person, or just a different person than Bob.
Yeah, it's gonna be awesome. So the music that you play after it.
Yeah.
And the last episode you had, was that Yellow?
Yellow.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah. It was Yellow.
So anyone who doesn't get that joke, get on it. Understand where your music comes from, who's making it. It's not just a commercial. Okay. So we were talking, and it inspired me to want to have a conversation, which we may have already done on this podcast, but I don't remember. And I'm not going to worry about ever repeating myself, because if we continue this on. I spent
too much time worrying about that.
Yeah.
I do.
If we talk all the time in person, and we talk to different people, and we talk and we record it, we're going to repeat ourselves sometimes, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And part of our process of how we think things through is by talking it through a few times, a few different ways, and it can change. And I'm not worried about me being consistent on my opinions or anything. I mean, that's a part of being a good person, I think, is changing your mind. Anyway, I don't know that we've ever directly talked about this, but I want to talk about gender roles. And I don't mean it in the like woke current term.
Okay.
I want to talk about gender stereotypes and gender roles in relationships, like dating and marriage.
Okay.
And so I want to talk about this from the angle of remembering being like in an environment where I worked with a lot of men.
Okay.
At the auto body shop, and a different environment when I worked with only women at the coffee shops, right? Which was first. Okay. I did coffee shops when I was really young. Started when I was like 23, 24 at the body shop, and I worked there until 2020. So I've worked there for like 14 years or whatever altogether. Uh-huh. The men about the stereotypes of the wife is a ball and chain.
Now I'm getting ground on where you're okay. going with this.
The wife's the ball and chain. The wife controls my pocketbook or my wallet. My balls are in her pocketbook. Like pocketbook is the East Coast way of saying purse. So it's a purse.
It's like having a catch.
It's your coin purse is in her purse. You get it? You get it?
Coin purse. Oh, like your
balls. Your ball sack. I don't know.
I got it. Does
no one else know that term? Because we had a dog that got neutered like way later. So he had like a little empty pouch, and we called it a coin purse. So I don't know if that's actually a thing, or we just made it up.
I think most
dog.
People can adapt real quick. And if you're calling something a coin purse
in the right context,
and they realize within a moment they're talking about a human body part, only a male, they'll be like testicles.
Oh, testicles.
Boom. Got it.
Got it.
I'm a puzzle king.
Okay. So the guys have those things, the N word that a woman never wants to hear. Nagger.
Oh, nagger.
She's a nag, to call a lady a nag.
I thought I was going to be way off with what I said, but that's like almost a direct
South Park. Almost the
reference there.
Yeah, to call a woman a nag, that was my pet peeve, especially in a workplace with mostly males where I then became their manager. For them to say I was nagging them when I was managing would be like the most offensive thing that they could say to me. That like was like nearing me wanting to just punch them in the testicles and throw it at the same time.
In the coin purse?
In the coin purse. Their empty, saggy old coin purse. They're all old dudes. Anyway, I think that the same goes flipped. Now, I was younger when I worked at the coffee stands, but the women there would talk about their boyfriends as they were kind of dumb, and they couldn't do anything, and they couldn't finish anything, and they never picked up their socks. And the women were always talking as if they were mothering people. Like, these guys are annoying, or he can't open up. emotionally. He doesn't ever tell me how he's feeling. Like there's those kind of stereotypes for men in relationships. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to kind of like,
there's another one I want to throw in.
Yeah, please.
It's not gender specific, mm-hmm. but it's the same. It's the absolute same issue to me, which is stereotypes towards men or women with children.
Mm-hmm.
The same as the wife's the old ball and chain. The husband is, I don't know, what's the stereotype there?
He's withdrawn. He's messy. He doesn't ever finish anything.
And then there's the, you have kids, therefore, life sucks or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You can never get out. You're always tired.
Cause like, as I mention all the time, that I work with these young guys, these 20-year-old dudes. And, they of course view me as this old guy that they work with. Sometimes they try to be pre-sympathetic to me or something, you know, and they'll reference the ball and chain wife kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even though they've never even had a girlfriend, as far as I can tell in general.
And they've never met me to know if I'm
yeah.
that stereotype.
They're like, they all say something about, man, I wish I could go to a concert. And they go, oh yeah, the old ball and chain won't let you. You know, or something. And it's like, no, I'm not going because I'm so angry at the city of Seattle for their COVID rules that I refuse to fucking step foot into their place, into that city again. Like, fuck you.
And boy,
fuck
that, you, you know? That record screeched. Well, that's not what they were expecting.
It's like, dude, like, seriously, like, you think my wife is stopping me from doing something? Like, okay, whatever. But then also that's equally put upon with kids. I'll be recounting the circus that, if you listen to Are We Content, I recounted on there, and it was kind of like a little slice of hell in a certain way, which I have to pull myself back from because my son enjoyed it. Right.
Yeah.
But if I talked about that in front of these guys and they'd see me getting kind of worked up about it, their response is like, yeah, having kids is a real drag.
It's like, what?
Like then you're forced to do things like go to the circus is what they're like saying or thinking. But the truth is I forced my kid to go to the circus.
Why would you blame the children for a circus that sucks? It's like, not, it's not their fault that we live in the society. Like it's backwards, but I mean, that's a really good, let's see. To bring it back to what you were saying about your coworkers, you called it like
sympathize.
They were trying to sympathize or relate to you.
Yeah.
And that's what I hear the most of this type of conversation. This is kind of like, how's the weather type conversation. When you don't know what to say, mm-hmm. you try to relate to another person by relating to the negative aspects of our family relationships.
Mm-hmm.
How did this happen? When did this happen? And if I follow it back, we could go a lot of places with this conversation, but TV is programming us to believe that dads are useless pieces of shit and wives are nagging, manipulative, money hungry pieces of shit.
So you're telling me that television as a whole is Married with Children? Because I love that show.
I know you do.
It's interesting to say that because I do. I want to bring up Married with Children. I like Married with Children. I know it's a stupid sitcom. It's really stupid. I'm not like promoting it as like either a great source of sense of humor or high production values or certainly not the values which are bestowed upon the viewer. But I always liked that. I liked it when I was a kid and I liked it when I was in my 20s, and I've watched it once in recent times and it was a little harder to watch now, but I still, in theory, in general, I like that premise because it was so antithesis of TV, because it showed the people being dirt poor, mm-hmm. because it showed that he didn't want to have sex with his hot wife. Boy, that's a little different than what we're even still told to this day, but like it showed that the relationship can be dysfunctional. Like, and I saw the world as having a lot of dysfunction in it. And I thought it was very refreshing to be allowed to see that dysfunction put on display and on high. The kids are stupid. The dad hates his job. He hates the wife. He hates the kids. All he wants to do is be left alone and watch television. All she wants to do is bang her husband and not work. And in retaliation to that, the dad doesn't want to bang the mom. The daughter is a slut. The kid can't get laid. The boy can't get laid. And that's all he wants to do. Like, everything about it was broken. Right. Yeah. And I thought that was refreshing in a time where, I don't know, the Leave It to Beaver was still lingering in culture. You know, sure. There was like, we all knew what a nuclear family was supposed to be.
Closer to that, you had the Cosby Show, which was like a Cosby great show. Example of good parents
simultaneously and, like, running on at the same time.
But okay, so it's interesting too, because you mentioned that dynamic of like the wife being kind of hot and the guy not wanting anything to do with her. Mm-hmm. And that's like the opposite of so many things, which is always like the wife doesn't want to have sex with their husband, who they're just like not interested anymore. And they're always trying to.
Now that would have not been as appealing as this, like
this reverse dynamic. This, yeah.
This like being flipped on its head.
And so you can think like the chicken or the egg thing, which came first. Did this came first in real life. And so we brought it to the TV so we could relate to it. Or did this happen because of slow TV programming inching us this way? I think one of my favorite examples is a show I didn't watch that much, but I think it was on like the Bunny Ears channel that we would get. We only had one or two channels, one Canadian one local one, forever, and it was King of Queens. Kevin James, the fat guy who's been in some funny
Paul
movies.
Blart.
Paul Blart Mall Cop. And
that's one of our son's favorite movies.
And he had a hot wife, right? And she was, I can't remember her name, but she was the one who called out Scientology. No. She called out Scientology. Do you remember?
Yeah. Oh, yes. That was actually, we watched some of that.
Some documentary. And I'm just spacing her name, and I'm so sorry, but you probably know her. She's like very New York.
She was a Scientologist. I'm spacing on her name too.
Yeah. She left the Church of Scientology, and she's calling them out for their practices. And there's been documentaries that she's.
Yeah. She's actually an interesting person. Aside from the fact that she was a sitcom actress.
Yeah. I can almost see her name, but I can't. I think there's an L. You know, there's like, so anyway, she is the wife, and she's like hot, and he's a fat slob, and she doesn't like seem to like, he's basically retarded. Like everything he does
at his job and stuff.
And he's like a UPS driver. It's not UPS, but he wears a brown uniform and he's a delivery driver. And their neighbor is Patton Oswalt.
It was so, before I hated Patton Oswalt.
I know, before I hated all the woke comedians. We went and saw him like twice live. Yeah.
We saw one of his specials get filmed in front of us.
Oh yeah, we were a part of a Netflix special.
Yeah, there were Netflix signs everywhere. We had no idea until
we were there and they were filming. Yeah.
I remember they asked us if we wanted new seats up front.
Yeah.
So because they needed to fill up front, and we were like, no. Because
we would have been on Netflix. And then I would have been like weirded out the whole time. I'm like thinking about that dynamic, and they didn't have kids, and it was like she didn't want to have kids with him because he was so stupid.
Mm-mm. Yeah,
they didn't have kids, and so they're it's like kind of like everything.
I just didn't watch that show that much. I saw it at least a handful of times because I can remember the dynamics of the show. Did they ever want to have kids? Was that like ever a
you know line? I don't really know, but
I
think
that just never addressed on the show.
I'm totally gonna just say this, even though it's dumb because I barely remember, and I didn't ever watch it consecutively, so I never, like, whenever I did see it, it was a random episode out of order. But I think they got a divorce at the very end.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
Oh,
and it was on for a while, like 8-9 years, but I think they didn't have kids. And I can't remember if that was ever like a problem that they weren't having kids, or if it was that she didn't want to have kids. But anyway, the moral of the story here is every episode is about something that she's telling him he needs to do. He's doing it wrong, and she's yelling at him. And she's yelling at him, calling him names, and he's making jokes about it. And it's kind of funny. Like, it's kind of a funny show. And I like, what's his name? The Paul Blart Mall Cop. He's kind of funny.
Yeah.
And, she's kind of funny too, actually. And but the dynamic is like this idea that the male can't do anything right, that she has to mother him in an angry way, and he's just like this disappointment. So it's like promoting this idea of like the woman like continuously demasculating the male, especially in front of his friends. You know, if he has friends over to play poker at the kitchen table, she's calling him out on something and demasculating, and they're going, ooh,
yeah, yeah,
you know, and then she's the old ball and chain who's leaving it so he can't ever go do anything fun. And I feel like whether or not it was intentional and it was first on TV, or it was things that actually happened in real life and TV was mirroring that, TV is magnifying these negative stereotypes and feeding them back to our culture as kids are growing up and mm-hmm. learning about the dynamics of what a husband and wife should look like. So
I think that's where it's most effective in the negative sense, is not as much on the even subconscious psyche of the genuine viewer, but shows like we're talking about on the children in the room who are just like, oh, mom and dad like this, mom or dad like this. This is what TV's like.
That's what it's like to be married.
He's laughing at the stupid dad. Oh, it's probably because dads are stupid.
Yeah. And so like,
or in Kevin James' case, you know, like, oh, these people don't have kids, but see, that's not, they still have turmoil on that show, right? That's what you're describing. Yeah. Like, it's a show about turmoil in a relationship without kids, that obviously if it was on for 10 years or whatever, it that's a long relationship without kids.
Right.
And it's not showing them like having constant fun.
No.
Like,
no. And in fact, they never have fun together. She tries to make him go somewhere with her or dress nice or, you know, like, and he's just not.
I would think that should be a component for the powers that be to be programming us. Like, because one of the stereotypes that I'm thinking of at the top of this show, when you're describing it, is people believing that you can't have any fun when you have kids.
Yeah.
You can't do actual fun stuff when you have kids. You have to go to a stupid circus instead of being able to go to a concert,
yeah,
or whatever it may be that you want to do. Just a bar,
right?
You know, a beer garden, at a festival.
Fun.
You'd think that it should be being portrayed that the single couples, the couples without kids, that they have a blast,
right?
Like, you'd think that the King of Queens setup should be how awesome it is to be a fat slob because you get a hot chick wife and you just go to the amusement parks.
And go to the movies and go out to eat all the time.
Or whatever a good time is. I just can't imagine that guy thinking cool stuff is a good time.
No, he wants to go to sporting events or whatever.
That's it. That's it for a lot of people. For real. It's like, oh, you have to go to the circus instead of being able to go to a Seahawks game.
Yeah.
You know,
So if you take another sitcom, scenario and think of Everybody Loves Raymond. Remember that show?
Yeah. You know, that's weird. I thought of that as I was asking about the kids on the last one, because I think of that show, which I watched maybe a little more than I'd seen King of Queens, but certainly didn't watch the full.
I didn't follow it.
I knew it enough to know the general dynamics. Yeah. And I know who Brad Garrett is because of that show and stuff like that. They never showed the kids.
No. It was like they were there and you could see them sometimes, but they didn't ever, the show wasn't about them doing stuff.
Maybe they would even be a plot device, but it wouldn't be them.
No, it's not from, it's like, oh, I got to take the kids to the play. Bye.
Yeah.
But what was in that show was a mother-in-law, the in-laws,
yes,
right?
Yes,
which were
yes.
very involved. And we could talk about the stereotypes of the in-laws.
I didn't even think of that. So like, even though we take the children dynamic out of that, it's still mother, father, son, and daughter, like kind of stuff because of it's just the generationally stepped up.
Right. We're talking about the wife's problems with her mother-in-law coming over all the time, the mother-in-law being the stereotype of the one telling her she's doing everything wrong, she's not cooking it right, babying and infantilizing the son, and he doesn't stand up to his mother, and she always wants him to stand up to his mother and say something, you know. It's another stereotypical things that I think then people go out in the world, and when they make jokes and try to relate to each other, they're thinking of those things as they're explanation of why it would be okay to say to a total stranger, oh, doesn't it suck to have your mother-in-law around?
I was just going to say, that's the stereotype that we maybe missed at the beginning that I'd throw in with the kids and gender roles is also mother-in-law, you know, like, I'll mention my mother-in-law and people, you become immediately sympathetic.
Yeah. Like, it's like, oh, they're
they're supposed to be sympathetic to a man in his 40s about his mother-in-law. which I do need sympathy on that. It's pretty terrible, but I never say that out loud.
I just think
it's in general, I'm not mentioning negative things. I'm like,
no, oh, you're like, oh yeah,
my mother-in-law came over this weekend. Oh, I'm sorry, man. So that she could spend time with the kids and I could go out to a movie with my wife.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing. Like, we got to see a horror movie. It was excellent. Thanks, Mom. And okay, so if we bring it back into real life, right? And there are some legitimacies to these stereotypes, and you have to wonder why. There were people in my life when I was young that were older than me and they were married, and I watched them and their dynamic of their relationship. And there was the man that was not keeping the woman's thoughts in mind, feelings. He would kind of go on and do his own thing. He would go take debt on, buy houses, buy cars, whatever, on his own without talking to her. But she was always there constantly criticizing everything he was doing. Mm-hmm. And it was like he couldn't do anything right. The times that he did do something right, fix something, help something, he couldn't do anything right. And she would always be talking to other people about how he'd never finished a job or how he was a slob and he didn't clean up and like he would mess up her area. And it was just this dynamic of like, he could never satisfy her, so why would he try? And she never felt safe because of him, so why should she cut him any slack? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And something that strikes me thinking of this type of dynamic too is I would imagine that the she in this also didn't like anybody talking shit about the he.
Yeah, in a way, like, you know, there were like certain people that could, but I think that person, I was like, why don't you go to counseling? And she was like, no, because they're just going to tell me I should divorce him.
Sure.
I don't want to hear them say anything bad about him.
Well, but what if that person, instead of saying something nice, what if they were to be like, oh yeah, fuck him, he's a piece of shit. You know, like, I'd imagine if
that woman would start to defend their husband.
She'd be like, oh no, he's not, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, really? Because I've been friends with you for 5 years and you've never said a positive thing about
me. Right.
And it's like, yeah, well, that's our word.
That's interesting too. Yeah. Yeah. Because it's like that idea of like, I remember too, like being like so mad at my brother, but if I had a friend that said anything about him at all, like even as a joke, I'd be like, no, I'm going to fight you.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to fight you.
Yeah.
And I remember that when we were kids, and it is similar to that. And I don't know if the same would go for the man in this couple that we're talking about. If somebody made fun of his wife, he would probably just go along with that. But that's his personality and the way he would deflect something or make fun of it. But then you go on to be married for 40 years and you find like this lady that's never been supported, this guy that's never been, you know, appreciated, and they don't have each other in their relationship the way I feel like you and I have each other in our relationship, where we support each other and we work through things together. It's like we're business partners, you know what I mean? As well as married.
Well, you know, I think what you're describing, especially in the 40 years of marriage since, I think a lot of marriages wind up being kind of empty by that time. Some flourish at that time, I imagine. I imagine there are some that after 20 years of raising kids, that's when the marriage really begins. I'd imagine that. I don't know. You know.
Yeah.
But I do have at least two examples in my life of people who got to 40-ish years of marriage and they still are married and they still live in the same house, but they sleep in separate beds, separate rooms, you know, not old sitcom, two little beds that they'd occasionally push together kind of a thing, but like separate rooms. Cause it's like, I don't know, they're stuck in their ways. They're not about to get a divorce. Things wouldn't be better by getting a divorce or anything. It would just make things complicated.
So instead of being married, they're more like roommates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was my first example of that was one of my grandpas and grandmas. And like that, I just never thought about it as a kid.
That they had separate rooms?
They had separate rooms, you know, and go visit them. And they had a 3-bedroom house. And I would sleep in the guest room. And on my right side was my grandma. And on my left side was my grandpa. And they each had their own rooms. And his was, you know, decorated with his newspaper articles and Boy Scout badges that he'd earned. And, you know, it was about, like a manly, you know.
Like decor, a den.
Like a den with a bed in it.
Yeah.
But he also had his office. Because he was an active journalist at that time still. And then she had her own room, which had, you know, paintings of flowers and was female. It was the feminine bedroom and the masculine bedroom. Uh-huh. And, you know, I had my own room too. Mine was covered in Alf posters. Like, it was, you know, like our rooms reflect our personalities. And I didn't really ever think like, oh, they have separate rooms, but my parents have the same room and my other grandparents have the same room. And
your other grandparents had the two twin beds nearby each other, right?
No,
no, they had one. They shared one.
Yeah.
I don't know why I pictured that being a thing. That's no, just because no. It's old timey movies.
Yeah, no, they had one really creaky spring mattress.
Aww.
Like, you know, like you could like when you'd lay on it, just like rolling was like,
yeah, yeah.
All both. That one and then the bed that I would sleep on when I'd sleep there were like these old school spring mattresses. Like I was little, so I didn't think anything of it. But I bet now one night of sleeping on one of those mattresses would fucking kill me.
I would murder you. But when you're like light and like all your connective tissue is still good, you know, like it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But yeah, I'm thankful we have a good mattress. It's made a lot of, I mean, maybe we wouldn't be married still if we had a bad mattress.
but yeah. You know, like, and honestly, I guess that got deep in my head. That I sort of thought that that's what people did when they get old, you know, they have separate rooms,
yeah.
Even though I didn't have multiple examples of that yet at that time. You know, like my other grandparents, like I thought they were old and set in their ways, the ones that still slept in the same bed. But then otherwise most people grow up and they quit having sex at some point, I assume. Right. So right. Like, why would they need the same bedroom? Like, I don't know. And now it seems kind of fucked up to me. And it seems like some TV programming too, like showing those twin beds pushed apart, is that like we sleep better without companionship.
I know. And then there's other people in other countries that they all sleep in their one room house with like four generations.
They can't imagine sleeping in a bed with two people.
Yeah. And they still manage to have kids. So there's some quiet sex going on. And that's great too. I think that like, I don't know. I'm it's so interesting to me how culturally acceptable it is to say negative things about one's own family and relationships or someone else's. Like it is literally small talk, like talk about the weather when you meet somebody working customer service or front desks of places, like as the receptionist or the estimator at the body shop, talking to people and just having them be like, yeah, my wife's such an idiot. She like can't drive, of course, because she's a woman and she just crashed this car into a pole. And it's like, then you talk to the wife of that guy and he's like, oh, he's just so prideful. He wouldn't admit he did that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And who's telling the truth? I don't know. And I would just like watch these people like be mean to each other. And you would think maybe it's like in a playful way, like they have a good relationship, but then you see them together and they are teasing each other, but there's stress behind it.
Sure.
You can tell the difference between someone who are they're poking in jest and it's fun for them. And some people who are doing that to make it seem like it's fun for them, but they're really trying to jab the other person.
Well, that's my negative dynamics with my immediate family that I was raised with. Right there is like they all kind of joke all the time, but
there's underwater.
I want to say pins and needles under the surface, but it's more like, you know, nails and razor blades under the surface, like where they all hate each other, but then they rib each other and everybody laughs. And if you don't laugh, then you're an asshole. And
but there's also all these things that are totally off limits for you cannot rib about. And it's the real life things that could actually be problems. Yeah. And they just don't ever talk about it.
Which is why I have such a poor dynamic with them, is like anything they say is funny and fine. Anything I say is crossing a line.
You can't call people out, man. Yeah. You just can't.
You
can't speak the truth. It's offensive. And I think there's a lot, I don't know, like, oh, what was this? There's a, I think it's a George Carlin bit. And if it's not in somebody else, it's okay. George Carlin's my like favorite of all time stand-up comedians. Probably one of the reasons why I really got in that, Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor, those three dudes.
Bill Cosby?
No, maybe a little bit just later.
After Hours.
Just the older stuff. Yeah, when he was young. No.
No, I just mean in real life, not when he's a comic.
Oh, just like him when after hours. Yeah. I don't think that's real. Anyway.
Don't. Yeah, neither do I.
Okay. But Carlin, I think he had this bit where he talked about how human beings relate to each other through negative experiences. And he's like, why do we do that? Why do we talk about how much we hate things instead of saying like, you know what? I had a really great orgasm last night, you know, like to relate to somebody else about the really positive experiences in our life. And I've thought about that a lot of times because it's like, what would our life be like if we tried to relate to each other in a positive way? I have to finish this thought.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see like, why can't like, I talk about how much I love my kids. And if I'm around the wrong person who doesn't speak like that, they're offended. They're like, oh, she's bragging. You know, she's being a really, really big jerk.
Well, my thought on that is Carlin's right. 100%. Right. Like just that you can't have a conversation where you're bragging about how awesome your orgasm was last night. That's not the way we interact with people. Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's examine that in 2023, where I have within a week, I've heard, I hate people who post positive things on social media because you know, it's all a lie and no one is willing to post how they just had to get an extension on their mortgage. And if they did, people would say, shut up. You're looking for attention.
So you can't,
that's like literally something I've heard.
So you can't post online is what you're telling me.
Yeah, right. Because, damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah. If it's negative or positive, people
but are that's, but that, okay. So take something. Off that last little okay. part. Cause that was just part of the real experience, but in general, it's a thing like, some people might not appreciate my social media because mostly what I post is like promotion for my stuff. And I'm not up there talking about my anxiety from a hornet coming near me last week, right? Yeah. I'm not up there posting about that. And it is true. If I was, what would my point be except to get some sympathy?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So like it's tricky though, because like, and this is, I guess it's been in the air for a while. Of like, I'm thinking, I remember people saying stuff like this back in the MySpace days,
mm-hmm.
putting it at no less than 10 to 15 years ago, that people were saying like, I don't like social media because it's so fake. Cause people will curate positive life to project out to people. And that's what I still hear from people about, like older people, boomers that are on social media that think that social media is only for keeping in contact with people from kindergarten.
Yeah.
For keeping in contact with past acquaintances with people, you gotta have Facebook, right? You know, there's people out there like that. And those people are also like, yeah, you gotta have Facebook because you gotta stay in contact with that person that you knew in preschool. But I kind of hate it because all they do is post about their grandkids
or their vacation pictures and they're like, they're healthy and tan and have a lot of money.
When you know that they're diabetic and that they're fucking just about to have a foot removed and you know, I don't know, whatever else, you know that their life sucks, but I can't see that their life sucks. I can only see what they choose for me to see. And that's this like positive stuff. But now the point of all that is that that's in stark contrast to something that was equally true when Carlin spoke and said, you're not allowed to talk positively. Like,
we have to only relate to the negative. Yeah.
Now, is there any possibility that there's a duality here? In real life, you can only talk negative. And in social media life, you can only talk positive. Well, or something
take one step back from that. And this comparison to social media is really good because that's taken over our main attention from sitcoms, which we were talking about, like 90s sitcoms, right? Early zeros or whatever those were. But this idea is interesting because I have a couple feeds. I have a personal Instagram account that sometimes people send me direct messages on. So I'll go and look at that, but otherwise I don't use it at all and haven't for several years. When I do end up over there, sometimes I'll forget that I checked it and then I'll come back onto Instagram later and I'll still be logged in there without realizing it. I'll start scrolling through the feed and it's a bunch of stuff that I'm like, why am I seeing these people that I used to know in middle school or whatever? Mm-hmm. Some of those people are super negative. They talk about how their boyfriend sucks or their husband can't do anything right or how annoying it is to have kids or, but first coffee, you know, like posting memes that say like, but first coffee or like, don't talk to me until I've had my coffee. I like my coffee to sit up and beg. Bark. Sorry, that's just a Garfield mug, that like a 1970s Garfield mug that we have actually. But yeah, there's people posting things like rosé all day, like just about drinking wine all day with their friends, you know what I mean? Like, and how work sucks and their boss sucks. Yeah. And so there's these people that have that attitude of like, everything sucks. You can't say anything nice. And then there's other people who wants to post that say, everything's great. My life is perfect and nothing's wrong. It's not an actual representation of anyone's life. I mean, I hope people look at the Greener Postures Instagram and see like, oh, look at all these cool ideas that I could try. Mm-hmm. Not like that. Oh, look at that lady that everything she does is perfect the first time.
Not so much what she up to.
Yeah. What is she trying to convey here by sharing these things? I'm like literally just trying to share that these things are fun and you could try it.
I guess, but I do that with my podcast posts, you know, like I'm sharing that because I hope people listen and I hope someone gets something out of that.
Right. Exactly. Me too. And then I'm also, hashtag me too. And then I'm also,
that was a great time.
So then I'm like, okay. So I had someone comment on one of my YouTube videos. It was Stella Q of, the Union of the Unknowns. She was on the Greener Postures podcast recently. She's from Australia. She said something. Oh, I hope I can remember it. She said, I love your warts and all approach. And I was like, I don't know what that means. And she's Australian and they say things weird. So I'm going to Google it. I think I get it, but I'm going to Google it.
Is it warts?
Warts, like warts.
And all.
Okay. Yeah. And so I Google it and it was what I kind of had the feeling I got from it, which means I love that you're just showing it all.
Yeah.
Not just the good parts.
Taking a photo of your skin and then airbrushing the warts up.
Yeah. I was like the hand, like I was picturing warts on a hand and it's just like it's going into that jar that I'm, but I don't have a warts on my hand. It's a figure of speech.
You put your hands in all the brines.
Yeah. Now they're all warty. That's how it happens. No, that is not how
it leaves you and goes into the food. So you can spread it to many people. I know how this shit works.
If anything, it's probably curing your warts. Okay. I don't have warts, so I don't know, but if I ever get a hand, a planter's wart on a hand, I will put it in some brine and see if it solves the problem. But okay. So warts
and sell that brine.
The warts and all was.
Okay. Sorry. The warts and all approach.
Yeah. Because the video was my Taqueria pickle mix video. If you want to watch it, it's like 3 minutes long. And I show how I make fermented Taqueria mix for our family that we eat all the time whenever we have tacos, and it's very good. And I have this one pitcher. It's a Pyrex pitcher measuring cup with a spout. It's got a little spout. It means it's supposed to be able to pour liquid, but this must have a chip on the glass or a deformity in the glass.
I fucking hate that.
When you pour it, instead of pouring out, it trails along the side of the jar, so or the vessel, so that it falls all over the place, right?
It's better to use the side.
The side. Turn it from the side and go fast. So I'm pouring that as I'm recording and it starts going all over the counter. I'm like, why did I measure in this? Because it's my only 4-cup measuring cup. I just got a plastic one. It's great. Yeah. But so I'm pouring it and I was like, oh, I'm not going to do this again. I'm not going to go get new vegetables from the store. You know, I used all my radishes from the garden. I'm not going to go like recreate this to try to like pour better for a video. I'm just trying to show people that you can make this. And part of making this is being messy. Sometimes it doesn't matter. You mix a little more brine, you fill the jar and you're done. You wipe it up. It's just salt water.
And that's the approach that a lot of people don't take on social media. Like it's either only warts or it's no warts.
So for this one, I just, for my audio, I was like, yeah. And this pitcher is super annoying. And this water went all over the place. I'm sure you could do this better than me. I'm sure you can pour this brine better than I can. So, you know, like, get to it. Like,
yeah,
it's like,
I can't even fucking pour the shit and I'm doing it.
And,
I'm doing it anyway.
And this is like my 7th gallon of these pickles that we'll enjoy in our life, you know, so far. And it's like, just part of making a mess sometimes in the kitchen is part of making stuff. So I'm not editing that out, you know, mm-hmm. because I'm using the time that I'm actually creating things in the kitchen to also record and then make a video. And I don't do things perfectly. It's not a set. I don't, you know, have total concentration. And
oh, you're going to edit mine out.
But like, it is what it is. And so I also see people talking about, like, there was this really funny meme, actually, to mention a meme, which is weird, but I think
it's hella meme, bro.
Legs, False Reality Check's Instagram shared it on their stories or whatever. And it was just like this picture of Michael Cera, the actor.
Arrested Development kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's really pale and nerdy and weak looking.
I imagine he's still
awkward.
Looks,
well, this was
a long beard now.
No, this was him young.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, you know, him, yeah. You know, from the Arrested Development or whatever. And Michael Bolton, isn't that what his name was?
I think so.
So I know Michael, anyway, Michael Bluth, but Michael something. He had a little different middle name.
Yeah.
George Michael. That's what it was.
Oh, that's right.
His name was George Michael Bluth. Anyway, Michael Cera sitting like at a table, like eating a taco or something. And he just looks weak and gross. And his mouth is weird when he's eating. And the meme was like, girls be like, oh, our first anniversary, my love of my life. You know, like, post that picture online and talk about how I did that. That picture of you.
A picture that you've used more than once of me taking a bite of a taco.
It was a burrito and you were eating it.
And then you've had our oldest recreate it at some point.
Well, I just happened to take a picture of him where he was making the same
face.
Oh,
that's right. Yeah, you didn't recreate it.
When he was eating and he was really little and it was cute. So I put them side by side. And then actually our second kid did the same thing. And I took the three of them and we posted it all together. But for some reason, I thought you were really hot in that picture. Like I thought it was really cute. It was like a moment of you just eating food.
You're really retarded.
Because I love you so much that like everything you do is cute. So I like, anyway, the point is that like you can post a picture of this like weakling kid and be like, oh, the love of my life, you know, or you could say, look at this idiot. He doesn't even grow armpit hair yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
so like, I don't know. There's just like, we can see, there's so many filters in which to see something through. But I think like the way we put stuff out there for other people matters. And so like things like sitcoms and stuff like that, perpetuating these in-person conversations with strangers that you have about the weather or about how much your wife sucks. Like if we could all just be maybe a little more thoughtful when we were engaging with strangers and realizing that like, you don't know what that person has gone through. You don't know if that guy has his wife in a freezer in his house.
Yeah.
You don't want to just try to bro down with a stranger about how much wife sucks. You could also not know that that guy's wife just died of cancer a week ago and he was going to the grocery store for the first time leaving his house since that happened. Mm-hmm. We know because of our experiences in our lives that there can be really painful things that you internalize and hide from the world, things that people are going through, you know, extreme pain, you know, all these different things. And for you to try to like bro down with somebody about negativity, like it's not helping anyone. And it also, it's just like, I don't know, it makes you seem like a jackass. And I feel like rich, frat boy kind of people are the worst culprits.
I want to say there that broing down with someone on negativity can be really good for the person. If it's like real extreme negativity that, they're like struggling with in life.
Mm-hmm.
Like that their father just died of cancer.
Yeah.
Right. Is that what the example you just
gave? I said wife, but yeah.
So someone just died in their life of cancer. They need to bro down.
Right. But I'm not.
But so this is what I'm getting at is that when you generically do that.
Yes.
And you assume that that guy's negativity is that, you know, his wife is a ball and chain.
Yeah.
He has to keep his credit card in her purse, you know, kind of a thing. And you try and bro down with that. But it turns out that his father or she even just died of cancer.
Yeah.
Like, you're making things worse.
Yeah. Well, and that's why
you're not helping there at all.
Commenting on a personal level like that in a negative way with a stranger is weird. Mm-hmm. It's weird to do that. That's not like, hey, how about that weather out there? And I want to be like, and I never do this. Well, almost never. Oh yeah. Cause you see how much the planes are spraying. That's why it's so hot.
Yeah.
You know, when they complain, I could take it to the next level and make it weird.
Yeah.
But I don't do that. Just like I don't say
I do
to a, I do sometimes, but to the total strangers, I'm not usually trying to start a conversation.
No.
I have it to total strangers been like, isn't it weird? Just looking up when we're waiting in line or something. Isn't it weird that those planes that come over and leave those, like those exhaust trails, it just like that stuff spreads out and it's just like smog. That's so much pollution. I wonder what kind of planes those are that are causing all that pollution.
Yeah. If you want to do that, you don't want to think a good thing to seed people with on that. What? Seed cloud, seed their minds, seed cloud, their mind, is, hey, look at those trails coming off those planes. I can't believe environmentalists are okay with that.
Yeah.
Just leave it at that, because it's like, I mean, most of the time, if we start talking about this with someone who's like, you know, believing in climate change and, yeah, you know, the agenda, blah, 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 green, blah, 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 they're not going to like what we're saying. Mm-hmm. They're going to say, oh, no, it's not a secret government program that's doing it. It's you and your pickup truck.
You yeah. know, and I'm like, well, look at these airplanes that are like military planes that are higher up than all the other seed ones.
In someone's head, it's like, isn't it weird that that's not the fucking cause for all these green people?
Yeah.
Don't you think they should be? You know, they don't want us driving our pickups, but they're cool with that exhaust. Yeah.
If you say that to the right person, they hear it. And so saying it in that casual way where you're not saying you have an opinion or that you understand it.
It's just know a guy who thinks.
Yeah.
That's how you get away with saying anything.
Anything. So I don't know, like, I don't know where I'm going to go or conclude with this, but I have to say, like, I can't relate to people. You leave your socks on the side of the bed.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. This is like the fifth time you brought it up on the podcast.
But it's a really good example because it's something that I know that older couple I was talking about that I know, that woman hates picking that guy's laundry up off the floor. Hey, if it makes you feel
better, I put on dirty socks from the floor next to the bed this morning. So there's not some.
I know. It's so funny because a lot of the times you're like, where are my socks? And I was like, I'm washing them. And you're like, those weren't dirty yet. I could have worn those again. I only wore them for like 3 hours after my shower last night. It's like, oh, you could have. I agree. But anyway, the point is that I love you so much that like me picking up your socks is like, I'm happy that your socks are there because that means you're here. I'm happy that I'm washing your clothes for you because it's something I can do to help you.
I'm happy that you left piles of weeds in the garden because I know that you're here.
And you can pick those up.
Because I know that you're weeding. No, and I'm trying to make it sound like I have one too, but no, I really do. You know, like I like that. I prefer that over that. You said that if you were to say, I'm not going to pull that weed out because I don't have a wheelbarrow handy and I've got a kid and a dog and blah, yeah, blah, blah.
What a person.
But instead you just pull it out and you put it right there. And then that makes it really easy for me to come through with a wheelbarrow, scoop all those up. And then like, I've made a ton of progress.
So you say it's easy for you to go through and pick up all those piles and put it in a wheelbarrow. And someone else who hated their wife would say, she leaves all these piles. And now I have to, instead of just moving the wheelbarrow, I have to go pick up all these piles and put them in the wheelbarrow.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's just like me saying, instead of just grabbing the laundry basket and doing laundry, I have to go around and find all these socks in hidden places. And there's also always socks upstairs in the rec room.
That's not my fault.
Because our 2-year-old likes to take your socks off and give you a foot rub. And it's cute because the foot rub lasts like literally 0.3 seconds. It's like he struggles for so long to get the socks off. It's really hard for him. And then when he does, he like just barely touches your foot and it's like a foot rub and it's over and it's so cute.
That's great.
So I just think like, it's the same thing as people complaining about their kids. And really it relates to this thing I've talked about a lot when our kids were little, is people would relate to me by saying, oh, how old's your son? You know, it was a smile. Oh, he's 2. Oh, the terrible 2s. Oh, I'm like, you just wait until he's talking, or you just wait.
You just wait
until you have to potty train. You just wait until they're talking. You just wait until they're a teenager.
You just wait until they're an adult.
Right.
You just wait until you're still paying their insurance for them when they're 40 years old.
I'm like, you just wait until you're fucking dead, because that's like, why would you like try to dread your way into the future? future. Like I used to, I had this, when I had a lot of anxiety and I was writing a lot, a term that I thought for myself that I'm wincing into infinity. Like I'm always like bracing myself for something bad to happen. And it's like, why would you just like go and promote that to people? Go wince into infinity, go flinch your way into the future and just like worry about everything that's about to happen. And like not appreciate that. And when your kids start, oh, just wait till they're walking. Oh, they're going to get into everything. Not say, oh my God, my kid's walking. That means that he's physically able to, and he's hitting the milestones that we're expecting, and he's healthy and he's alive. And I was able to have a child.
I got a bunch of that when our first was at whatever age that, you know, he was like starting to walk and stuff. I've actually mentioned her on here before, an old supervisor of mine who is white trash as fuck and always drinking some tall boys and had kids, I think.
Yeah. Well, she was a grandparent like
and shit.
She's like a 45-year-old grandma that sounded like that.
And she hated everything about everything, especially family and kids, even though she's a grandma. So, you know, at the same time, like, oh, I love my grandkids more than anything, you know, like when I have to say that. But most of the time, I just like fucking hate everything. And I'd say, oh, yeah, I started potty training today. Oh, that's great. Now you're going to have to deal with dirty underwear instead of something you can clean up easy. I started walking today. Oh, great. Now you got to childproof even more stuff. They're taller. That means that, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Like now they can reach like, all where you keep the knives.
Like, you know, not that I broke down with this lady. Like I didn't come and tell her, I didn't come in and have these things for her, but you know, they were like, it was a factory and we had systematic breaks where everyone's on break. So, you know, I'm making conversation with someone else and just telling them what's going on in my life. And she would have to butt in with anything about kids, anything
negative,
you know, like, what have you been up to with your kid lately? Oh, we started watching this new cartoon blank, Uncle Grandpa. It's amazing.
Uncle Grandpa is amazing. It's a little loud for the morning, but
good morning.
Despite what he says.
But she would, you know, pipe in to say how horrible cartoons are. Like I used to have to watch cartoons. Like, thank God I don't have to watch cartoons.
Paw Patrol and like, you know, or they're like whatever things we've never watched. That yeah, things, I'm like, yeah, because you pick the crap ones. Yeah, don't let them watch Grandpa.
Because it was my level of retardance. So
it's like a show we would watch without kids.
And we watched Ren and Stimpy at that time too, because like I actually liked that.
And you know, just like, put that on the other day for the kids for a minute.
Yeah, and they love it. My point being that, she's one of these, she was a, let's come up with a word for it. Like a stereotype vampire.
Oh, like the energy vampire.
The energy vampire of the stereotype about family.
Sure.
As an umbrella term to mean gender roles or mother-in-law roles.
Suck the joy out of anything family. Roles. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Suck the joy out of fucking a family vampire.
Yeah.
That's not a family of vampires.
Vampire. That would
be beautiful.
Vampire.
But a vampire. and I think there's a lot of them. And I think it's both her who had kids and you couldn't tell anymore. You know, like that, like she doesn't talk about her kids or anything positive from raising kids perspective, but they have grandkids and they avoid the grandkids as much as possible, but then they're sweet as fuck when they do see the grandkids. Until they've had that 12th beer. And then that's when they let loose.
Well, we had a, I knew a guy that had a kid that was really young. He had got cancer and he was going through all these chemo treatments or whatever at like Seattle Children's Hospital for like over a year. The kid was super small, like 3 when he was diagnosed at most. And then there was like this day, the guy was just complaining about how his kid won't eat anything. Anything he offers him, he's just rejecting. All he wants to have are like chips or something like that. And we were like, oh, like, is this at the hospital? And he was like, no, he's home. And this guy had talked about the cancer treatments and everything for a year. Mm-hmm. But he failed to tell people that his kid was cleared to come home.
The way
he shared that he had come home is by complaining that a toddler wouldn't eat just anything.
I'll raise you one on it.
Yeah.
Knowing this guy and all of it. I bet that he felt that he fucked up by bringing that up. because he was looking for the angry sympathy points when he said it. And then he realized, oh shit, now they know that he's home.
And everyone was my God, that's so great.
He would have been much more happy, in quotes, happy.
Miserable.
Would have been more miserable, therefore.
Satisfied? I don't know. Right, it's hard to say.
Way to verbalize it. But for them to have still to this day think that his kid was in the was in children's hospital.
Yeah.
As if no one asked and he just assumed that they all thought that my kid is still in children's hospital and has been in there for 4 years now.
Yeah.
Or however long.
But instead he seamlessly moved on to complaining about having a toddler in his house.
Now, I'll tell you, I was there for the windup of that kid going to children's hospital. And that was a daily conversation with everyone loudly and a big deal. Like it was a huge deal.
And then everything was about how much he's driving there and how much everything costs and all that. But that's that person. Don't be that person, people. There's a choice here. And if I can get back to tying this into like a husband and wife relationship, as we can do, since we're a husband and wife having this conversation before we wrap up here, is to say, if I would have treated you the way that woman I was talking about earlier treated her husband, about how you couldn't do anything right, how I berated you for leaving your socks on the floor. You didn't load the dishwasher the way I do. So I berated you for that. Slowly over time, I'm going to train you to not do any of those things.
Right.
And then I'm going to increase getting upset with you because I'm going to see that you're not doing anything for me. And then you're going to continue to not do anything because you can't do anything right. And then vice versa, if you were to be like that guy where you didn't try to take the time to see how I needed to be supported emotionally, if I was being fearful, you push through, saying, hey, let's talk about it before I purchase this house.
You know what? We both nipped some of this in the bud, early in our relationship. We trained each other on the opposite of some of what you're talking about. I don't know if I like saying train.
No, me neither. But you teach someone how to treat you by your behavior.
We have always shared laundry duty.
Mm-hmm.
When we were first living together, we did not have laundry.
We didn't have a washer and dryer in the house.
So we went to the place, we call it laundromat.
Went to the laundromat sometimes, or sometimes to one of our parents' house.
And we often did that solo.
Mm-hmm.
Especially you would take it solo to your mom's. I would take it solo to the laundromat.
Right.
And then I would be like, well, especially because you would fold all the clothes before you come home. Or now I realize it was your mom.
Well, sometimes it was her. Sometimes I would be like, I'm going to run to the grocery store. And then I'd come back and it'd be folded. it was nice.
But I would say, well, I bring it home folded too. Like, I don't want to, like, I'm not less than, I'm not going to do this half-assed compared to, if you bring it home folded, I can bring it home folded. And when we would do it together, we would just be folding and hanging out together,
yeah,
like at the mat. But then I would do it on my own and I would apologize to you. Like, I'm sorry, I probably folded your underwear wrong, or whatever. Like I couldn't really figure out how to fold these tank tops because I don't wear tank tops and I don't wear girly material. It's got a different feel to it.
Yeah.
It doesn't fold like my cotton shirts, which were pretty much all I'd ever folded before, were my cotton shirts and cotton socks and cotton pants.
Jeans. Yeah.
Pretty much everything just basic. Well, which is good. They all had the same texture.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just kind of knew how to do that. I'd never done anyone else's laundry.
Yeah.
Like ever. I've been doing my own laundry since I was probably 12, and that's it.
And for me to just then assume you should know, and if you did it wrong, I should yell at you for it, or be mad.
But you made it real clear, it's fine. Like, however you do it, I can.
I'm just thankfully you did laundry for me. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
No one's ever done my laundry besides my mom.
And then I can't think of a way to say this isn't correct, but if you weeded something, it's just, I'm leaning on the last example I gave. If you weeded it wrong, I wouldn't be like, you did it wrong.
When I mowed the lawn I tried to surprise you once and mow the lawn, and I had to go and fill a gas can to do it. And I was so scared to fill a gas can. It was when we lived downtown.
Yeah.
And you came home and I was almost done mowing the lawn. And I was really proud of myself.
Uh-huh.
And I could tell you were disappointed.
Yeah, but you—that's my fucking job.
That's your thing. Don't take my one joy.
You got to know the back of my hand for the first time that night.
Don't take my one. It was when
I don't remember this.
Okay, so it's like you were definitely disappointed, but I thought I was helping you because you were like working extra and you weren't feeling good at that time. Uh-huh. So I like, and I thought I was just going to do it really quick, but then I realized I needed to fill a gas can, and I was like multiple layers of scared of filling a gas can and like spilling gas in the car and all these things, and it just randomly exploding for no reason. But I did it. And then I filled it and I mowed the lawn and I was almost done when you got home and I was really proud and I could tell you were disappointed and I couldn't understand why. But then like, instead of us reacting and being defensive, you were thankful. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for mowing. Like that's excellent. And I was like, took the time to think about your reaction and how I could tell you were saying you were thankful, but there was more to it. And I realized like, that's your job. Like you might not feel good, but you feel good about the lawn being mowed and about accomplishing that task.
I'm better about the lawn being mowed when I don't feel good. Cause like I got something done.
You got something done. Anyway, you can check it off and then you could go lay down if you didn't feel good. You know what I mean? Or watch movies for the rest of the day or whatever. And like I took that thing away. And so I twofold realized you didn't train me not to help you, but you showed me that you were thankful for me, but also you showed me that you get satisfaction out of work. Mm-hmm. So that I realized that there's like things that if I always jumped up and fed the chickens before you or mixed the chicken feed before you every time or moved the heavy bags of feed out into the garage,
you would train me to believe that you prefer doing
it. Yeah.
That you like doing.
And it. I would train you to think that I could train you if depending on how I was acting, I could train you to think that I didn't think you were capable. And you might start for finishing something, for doing it on time, for doing it the way I want it done.
Great pulling it back, because that was the point that I was that I want to make with the laundry is you made it clear that you're okay with it any which way, but you could have just as easily taken that and been like, oh, thank you so much. This would be the polite one.
Because we've only been together for a little while.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. But I don't, maybe it could be this. I don't fold my tank tops. They go on hangers.
Yeah. I definitely don't hang anything up, but yeah,
I know. Yeah. But like something just like, I got it so wrong.
Yeah.
That then, you know, like, okay, so the next time I bring them home, I folded all your underwear and pants, but not your tank tops or whatever. Right.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, well now they all have wrinkles.
So I'm going to put them on a hanger, but I would have folded them to get them home.
Yeah,
if to me over explaining,
why are you taking the laundry and not bringing hangers? They need to come home on hangers.
Or to really over explain exactly how to fold something in a way that you don't care about it, so you wouldn't understand it the way I do, because I care about it and I see it through. So to try to train you how to precisely do it exactly to my expectations, and only to create that guaranteed failure the next time you do it, and need to be disappointed and tell you you did it wrong and tell you how to do it right again.
So
there's only so many times somebody's going to do that.
And that could be as short as like 3.
Yeah.
With me personally, like if I've done it a third, and this is like, you know, the many paths of life. Mm-hmm. If the first 3 times I had done your laundry, if you responded like that, and then I try, maybe 3 is not enough, but like by the 5th, 6th, 7th time, I might go, okay, you know what? I take my laundry. Like, we'll just get separate hampers.
Yeah.
I'll do my own laundry. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do your laundry. Like if I'm finally getting the folding right, but you're like, what kind of soap did you use?
Yeah. this smells weird.
Yeah. This smells funny.
So it could be the same thing as when we merged our finances.
And I would definitely do that if you kept mowing the lawn. I'd be like, well, you know, it's good, but
I know, because if you were critical about the way the lawn was mowed that day, it would have hurt my feelings and made me feel like I shouldn't try to do things for you or try to help you. But you weren't critical, and you probably looked at it and thought, yeah, I would have done it different. And there are other times where we've done, where we share duties that one of us is better than the other one. And we do kind of train each other like we would at a workplace, where we try to make sure you can understand how I see it, because I've done it more than you or whatever, or I understand how you see it. So we can learn from each other. But there's like a lot of that time where you merge finances when you first get married or you commit. I remember not doing that right away. And I feel like you were a little offended.
I was.
And we've talked about finances, one of our first episodes, and banking. And I don't know if we talked about this aspect of it, but you were, I didn't want to get a joint checking account. Mm-hmm. and I didn't want to merge our accounts. I wanted to just keep them separate. And you were offended. And it was like, I wanted you to still just pay half the rent and I pay half the rent.
Yeah.
And I had the examples I had growing up were that finances were a big cause of stress and that there were sneaky things that happened with it. And there were not, people weren't on the same page.
Right.
And there was a lot of feeling of being scared that everything you put in that account would just be gone.
Yeah.
And so I had to like decide, okay, well, I'm choosing to trust you and I do trust you. And I've seen you managing your own finances and I know you have zero debt. I know your credit score is really good. All these things that like tell me logically that you're a person I could put my trust in if I was going to do business with you. Why wouldn't I do that in our relationship? Well, it's just because I had a bad example set for me and I was fearful because of that generational trauma.
Generational trauma. And you hung out with some pretty shitty people in between.
Oh yeah. And then any boyfriend I had or friends that I had, I would never have let them know, use my credit card or I didn't have credit cards, but I wouldn't let them use my debit card or know my bank account info. Like I would, I didn't trust my friends, let alone, yeah, a boyfriend that it was, I had no examples in my life where that was a good idea.
Plus you probably weren't that certain that you'd be with me forever either.
Yeah. I mean, like even early when we were getting married, there was probably still
we're at married
point. I think we merged right after we got married.
I guess that there would be a point too with getting married where you'd marriage is temporary for a lot of people.
Well, people keep their finances separate still in marriage. Right. And so what I think that at that time where I had to say, okay, let's do this, but I'm very particular about the way I keep my, you know, everything. And I want to take over paying the bills with our money and balancing the books. And you were okay with that. So you trusted me to handle those things, even though you've never had anyone else pay your electricity bill for you.
Not once.
Right. You were, even if you lived in
the exception, maybe. No, I think every house I ever lived in, I was that guy.
You were the guy, right?
Yeah.
And I was always the guy because I was the one who was responsible enough to make sure the lights were paid. And it was always my house.
No, there was one. I'm sorry. I'm just scanning through the houses I lived in. There was one house I lived in where
somebody else paid.
I moved into their place and
you just paid them.
He was already established.
And they handled it.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's situations, but for the most part, you were responsible for paying everything. And at that time, those were other bills that were very personal that you were still paying, you know, like everything I just started handling it and you had to trust me and I had to trust you that you could have the bank account info and a debit card and not just drain my account. Mm-hmm. Where we were both putting money in. And I think there's a lot of, I don't know, these moments in a relationship where you teach each other how to treat each other. So if there's anyone listening that's just starting out in a relationship, think about that. Mm-hmm. And think about how, well, there's these other things. Like I heard once, don't keep score of how many diapers he changes. Somebody said that to me once when our baby was new.
Seven this week. You've got three.
You you changed so many more poopy diapers than me, even though you he waits for you. And I'm like, oh, Chad, I've had him all day. Can you do it now? And it's like, you do it. It's great. You're great at it. And okay, so don't keep track when they're really little. Don't keep score and don't try to alternate. You know,
yeah, no, and more than just diapers.
Don't keep score.
It's stupid. You're gonna get into more trouble than I've done laundry X times, and you've done laundry.
So
X
instead
times.
Of doing that, try your best to notice all of the things that person does that benefits you, whether or not it's like directly for you, not just them bringing you flowers or a latte, but them like making dinner.
Notice those things, but I just want to expand on what I was just saying. If you keep track on whatever it may be, whether it's mowed the lawn, done laundry, done dishes. Oh, there's a good one. Cooked dinner or done dishes, you know, like keeping score on that kind of stuff. Cool. Yeah. Like for some reason you're pissed off about it.
Yeah.
Like, dude, I'm the only one doing dishes. It's been like a week and I'm the only one who's done dishes. And that might be true because that's the way the cookie crumbled that
week. That's the structure.
That's the cards that you got, the hand that you were dealt. That's what it happens to be. And if you say, come on, bitch or girl or friend or whatever, you know, wife, I don't know what the dynamics is, but come on. I've done it seven times and you've done it zero times. Okay. That's an understandable play, but now you're opening up that she's going to start paying attention to that about socks on the side of the bed.
Yeah.
She's going to start paying. And if you're winning, that's going to, if you're winning in quotes, air quotes here, if you're winning, so you win, you have done 7 dishes in a row and she's done 0, then you won. She'll do the next one, but then she starts examining it. And she's like, oh shit, but I've done laundry 12 times and you've done it 0 times.
Thank you. Cause this leads into what I was saying is like, this is you keeping score, all the negative things. And this is just going to make you look for the negative things.
And now the two of you are going to be constantly examining, you know, and maybe this takes a year for it to build up to what I'm saying.
And really it takes years and years to really get to where no one's even trying to help.
And suddenly you've been married for 40 years and everything
you do is wrong. And you're not even going to try to do nice things anymore.
And, you know, like maybe a better method, if that's your personality and you can't avoid that, is it just get just established with it real quick. You do laundry, I do dishes, you do cooking, I do garbage, you know, like,
and you could, and then see what naturally, you know, kind of starts to happen.
Your department.
But then really, like we say that all the time. I was like, yeah. You know, like take the trash out. It's your
making
department.
Plans. That's your department.
That doesn't mean I never take a bag of trash out, like a thing of dirty absolutely. Diapers or even drag it out to the curb once in a while. But
it is like my department to remember that it goes out to the curb.
Sure.
You know,
and I still try to remember too, so I can help you.
Yeah.
And it's like all the things are like that, where we're just here to support each other. And that really came from me making a conscious effort to notice the things that you did. Uh-huh. So like when we were first together, I noticed that you took my laundry and you washed them and you used your own quarters and you brought it home folded.
No, I robbed homeless people. What? I can now tell you now that it's in the past.
You just reached into their bucket and took a handful out.
They were blind. I didn't know what I looked like.
That's so funny. But you know what I mean? Like there's things every day that people do that help your benefit you. And even if it's not something that they're doing for you, just something that they do that you like they make you laugh or, they look cute in a trucker hat.
Well, it's all about finding the right balance for you and your personality and your partner's personality in whatever capacity that may be. That you're not, if I have to mow the lawn to be satisfied, which mm-hmm. is pretty close to being a truthful statement, like whether we were in the city, it was absolutely true. When we were downtown, like I had nothing to fucking do in my yard.
Yeah. There was like no maintenance to do on the house. I had to let you fix it when we had a leaky sink and not call the landlord.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I was like, I'd go kind of nuts. Like I felt unconnected to my land that I was living on. Like we lived on that land. Like, you know, like that's kind of a weird like concept.
And we had a little postage stamp yard and you like kept it really nice.
So if that's important, then you probably better back off if it's not important to you. If it's important to both of us that we mow the lawn, then this relationship wouldn't work.
Or we find out how to like take turns, or like, you know, you do this part, I do this part or something.
But if someone loves to cook, but doesn't want to always cook, you need to like have the proper balance. The two of you need to want to cook the proper amount and eat out the proper amount and stay in the proper amount, mm-hmm. you know, like all the, you know, like, and let those cards fall where they are. I think where people get into trouble is when they try to manipulate and or lie about themselves, manipulate the other into doing what they want them to do. Or lie about themselves.
I don't mind doing the dishes. It's fine for the first year.
If you say, I don't mind doing the dishes, but in reality, like you fucking hate
it. And that person's like still holding their farts in front of their partner too, you know, like
you better start farting too.
You can only do that for so long.
If you are someone who would either rather starve or go broke eating out, because
you just don't want to
hate doing dishes. Yeah. Like if it were up to you, you would not own a dish because that's just your personality or whatever. Then you better find someone who likes doing dishes and is not going to resent you for not doing dishes, or get over yourself enough to do dishes a couple times a week.
Yeah. Well, there's always that too. There's compromise and working together and all of it, but without you realizing it, when you're in an early relationship, these habits start to form. And if there's anyone that's starting a relationship can think about this, because I did, and it helped, I feel like it helped us so that I didn't just fall into the same patterns of the examples that were set to me by the adults that I knew in my childhood.
Well, that maybe that's the if we're offering advice, which I feel like we have been.
It has been a little bit this time, hasn't it?
It's talk about these things.
Yeah.
Because neither of our parents, other of our sets of parents, talked about these things.
No, it was always a quiet resentment. And like
we talked about how they didn't talk about. Mm-hmm. And we talked about.
We did the World As It Is Today podcast unplugged. since like week or the first time we sat down at
since a 2009, picnic
table together at a park.
It's because we like this type of talk.
Yeah.
And understanding. And then because we like the talk, we have actions and follow throughs.
Well, because we can examine all these things and do it with in a way where we feel comfortable enough with each other that we don't get offended, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's times where we might get our haunches up and then the other person notices and we work through that,
yeah.
You know? And I think that that's all that it is just being willing to compromise and work through things, but also to like find really, yeah, the way the cards fall, the natural way that the things should kind of go. You mow the lawn and take the trash out. I do the dishes. I cook the meals, mm-hmm. and I do the grocery shopping because I want to, but you don't put the stuff away because I don't want you to. I want to know where the stuff in my kitchen is. So I put it, I also put it away.
I typically do not put groceries away. The only times I will is if you get deeply distracted and I'm like, oh shit, some of this needs to get in the fridge.
And you'll just put it and you know, I'll reorganize it. And I'm thankful you got it in the fridge.
And I'll put it in a way it's easy to reorganize.
But you always come to the car and you bring the bags in for me.
Yeah, but I would also never, or at least intentionally, not help you bring groceries.
You bring the stuff that from the car into the house for me, and I always appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've gone on a little longer than expected here.
Oh, that's great.
Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Yeah.
And tell us what you think. If this one resonated with you and you have anything to say, reach out to us in our places, Instagram DMs or emails. We love to hear from you.
At Mr. Chudex Indeed on Instagram. Be sure to ask for a request of friendship or whatever the follow.
I formally request your friendship.
I have it set to private, but I accept basically anyone that anybody. Comes to. The only ones that I don't accept are like, you know, people that I knew in preschool.
Yeah. What the hell? Why would you want to keep in touch with
literally
those
the opposite of the boomers that we were discussing earlier.
Right. Yeah. Thanks everybody for listening. And at Greener Postures, of course, on Instagram is where you can find me. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Bye-bye.